Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman.
Present.
Howard. Howard. Tice.
Tice present.
McBadgett.
Present.
Bliss.
Present.
Gomez.
Present.
Hassan.
Present.
Heinrich.
Present.
Hurt.
Present.
Juergens.
Juergens present.
Olson.
Present.
Barr.
Present.
And Ryer.
Present.
Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Did we get Representative Howard?
He just logged in, and being his LA, I will count his
And you've announced a quorum?
Yes, we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Next order of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, February 11. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, so moved.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Members, please unmute yourselves for a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. We have two bills on the agenda today that accomplish a similar goal of preserving naturally occurring affordable housing, the difference being the funding mechanism. So because we're going to hear from a group of testifiers speaking to the two bills, we won't make the motions initially. We'll hear the testifiers. We'll hear some introductory remarks from the authors, and then we'll offer the motions later. Representative Howard, would you like to give introductory remarks to House File 443?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House File 443 and the next bill you'll hear deals with an incredibly important issue, and one that's truly a blind spot when it comes to our state policy response to our affordable housing crisis. From an economic perspective, a moral perspective, an equity perspective, and an efficient use of our state dollars perspective, we cannot afford to look away any longer when it comes to preserving naturally occurring affordable housing, or NOA. And what I mean by NOA is housing that is affordable in our communities all across the state, not by virtue of public subsidy in any way, but mostly by virtue of its age. It's several decades old, often needs some TLC, but it is an incredible and important source of affordable housing in communities all across the state, hundreds of thousands of units of housing. But what is happening to this NOA housing across our state? And to illustrate that, I want to highlight two stories from my community over the last several years in Richfield. That are not unique. The real estate market over the last several years has created a situation where these NOA properties are highly desirable for a fairly affordable price, especially if you're an investor with deep pockets. These developers can come in, purchase a property, make some renovations, put in some new countertops, change the rental requirements, increase the rents by hundreds of dollars and displace folks from their affordable housing, and that housing then, that affordable source of housing is gone. And that's what happened in Richfield at Crossroads at Penn in 2015. At that time, I'd been on our city council in Richfield for just a few months when I learned that the 750 units at Seasons Park, over 2,000 members of our community, they all received a note under their door that said their building had been purchased and that they would either have to reapply and pay rent of hundreds of dollars more per month if they were to qualify or be evicted. This happened in around Thanksgiving in 2015. And the response to the community was fear, anger, sadness. Many folks had lived at Crossroads for more than a decade. And I vividly remember attending a community meeting to hear from these residents at Crossroads, and the stories were just heartbreaking. And one story in particular that has always stuck with me was a mother who was holding her one-month-old child. Through tears, she shared that one of the new requirements at Crossroads to reapply was that each unit could only have two people. So her and her husband would be evicted by virtue of having their baby girl, and she didn't know where she was going to live. As a council at the city level, you know, we were really flat-footed in this instance. Speaking for myself, I want to do everything I could to fight for these residents and help them stay in their home. But sort of what I learned is the historical trends for government in these situations was to not be involved. You know, this is a real estate deal of no concern to city or state government in general. There were no tools available. So all in all, more than 2,000 members of our community were evicted, including more than 100 children that were displaced from our school district in Richfield. About 40 of those children experienced homelessness as a result. And the trauma and negative ripple effects from this event are still reverberating in our community. And as I mentioned, they're not unique. In one of our first hearings, we heard from Linda Soderstrom, who had lived at Crossroads at Penn. Just about a year later, this happened at another facility, and she was evicted again. So I want to tell you another story that happened in Richfield about 18 months later, literally a mile or two down the road at Seasons Park. That's another aging property in Richfield. It had 400 units, and it was one of the only, places in Richfield that has many 2- and 3-bedroom apartments. So there was more than 300 children that lived there. And you'll hear from Mayor Regan Gonzalez in a little bit. We heard that Seasons Park was about to be purchased and flipped as well. And, you know, both Marie and I scrambled, and still without really many tools from the state, it felt desperate at the time. And we were fortunate to get a hold of Alan Arthur at Aon, a nonprofit that is in the business of purchasing and maintaining the affordability of units. And initially we were told that this was almost a done deal, that there was nothing that we could do. But by good fortune and a lot of organizing and persistence, over the course of a couple weeks, we were able to turn the tide, and Aon was able to purchase Seasons Park. And that we had a very different kind of community meeting when representatives from Aon announced to a very concerned and frightful community that they were going to be able to stay in their homes, and they were going to be able to afford their homes. And to this day, Aon is the owner and operator of Seasons Park, and they continue to make improvements to make that even a better source of housing for our community. And so I share these two stories to just paint hopefully the picture of the moral challenge when it comes to preserving our naturally occurring affordable housing. But the reality is the state provides no resources truly to bring to bear to preserve our naturally occurring affordable housing. And as I said, I hope I've made the moral case, but to make the economic and efficiency case, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about the need to build new affordable housing, which we absolutely need to do, no question. But at Crossroads at Penn, we lost 750 units of affordable housing like that. And to build roughly 750 new units of affordable housing through housing infrastructure bonds, that would cost upwards of $75 million or more, about 3/4 of what the governor has proposed for use of HIB dollars this session. That's one property in one community across the state. And as you'll hear from testifiers, this is happening all across the state. The reality is we cannot afford to turn a blind eye any longer. And so the two bills you'll hear today are an essential first step for the state to do its part to preserve and improve the quality of affordable housing all across our state. And so my bill takes the approach of creating a statewide NOAA fund where operated through Minnesota Housing, largely so our nonprofit folks are able to access resources in a flexible way to stretch their dollars further so that they can preserve this naturally occurring affordable housing throughout our community. And for an investment of $50 million, whether that be through a fund like this or through Representative Egbaje's bill, we could preserve 25 to 3,000 units of affordable housing. And it is a charge on all of us to, like I said, not look away any longer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Egbaje, would you like to give introductory remarks to House File 1118?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. So today, my bill, House File 1118, is about providing more affordable housing by increasing the flexibility in housing infrastructure bonds. This bill would allow for these bonds to be used to acquire and rehabilitate naturally occurring affordable housing to preserve a source of affordable housing. Under this bill, NOAA is defined as multi-unit rental housing, where the majority of the units are affordable to individuals and families with incomes at or below 60% of the area median income. This would apply to units that otherwise do not receive place-based state or federal government subsidies. We know that Minnesota faces a housing crisis and has for a number of years, even before the pandemic. We also know that the type of housing that could be readily available to low-income families is disappearing, and we are not building fast enough to replace it. As we heard from Representative Howard, this type of affordable housing is important to ensure that people at some of the lowest income levels have housing stability. We need to ensure that working-class people and families making less than $60,000 a year can live in a home where their cost of rent does not take up the majority of their earnings. These NOAA units are not only in our urban areas, but they're also in the suburbs and our rural communities. And this type of housing is crucial in ensuring that housing remains accessible for Minnesotans at all income levels. So housing infrastructure bonds have been an impactful tool that Minnesota has used to provide more housing across the state. This type of capital investment in housing has provided Minnesotans with hundreds of homes for more families who are facing homelessness and need supportive services, seniors, and even some new construction. Yet when it comes to preserving housing that is already affordable and available, we seem to have limited resources dedicated to that goal. And when we lose this type of housing, it harms working class people and often Black and Brown Minnesotans who are at most risk of losing their housing to higher rents. There are already multiple barriers to housing, and if we let our NOAA stock disappear, it is another one that we are creating when we do nothing. We will only deepen our housing crisis, and it will be costlier in the long run to end it if we don't find these pathways to funding. Because of the success we've seen from using housing infrastructure bonds, it is imperative that we also expand its ability to assist in ending the housing crisis. Housing infrastructure bonds support our housing providers and nonprofit developers with a funding avenue so that they can maintain dignified housing for all Minnesotans. This funding source will make it cheaper to preserve the housing stock in the long run. The possibilities that open with using housing infrastructure bonds to preserve more affordable housing will be yet another tool in Minnesota's box to prevent homelessness and displacement across the state. And so at this time, I would like to turn it now to our testifiers. Thank you.
We have three testifiers. The first is Ann Mavity from the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you so much. My name is Ann Mavity, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership. I appreciate being invited back to this committee. As you know, Minnesota Housing Partnership works across Minnesota and the country to advance affordable housing through research, advocacy, and providing direct technical assistance to rural communities and tribes. So I really appreciate the efforts that this committee is doing to get a handle on some of these really challenging issues. And NOAA housing, particularly, as Representative Howard and Representative Ogjave has mentioned, NOAA housing is this affordable private market housing. It's the largest source of affordable housing in Minnesota and nationally. And with this housing crisis that we're now enmeshed in, we need all hands on deck. All of our tools need to be deployed to ensure that we have enough housing to support our growing economy, to support our kids to thrive, our elders and grandparents. We know we need to build a lot of new housing. And what we're focused on today, we need to make sure that we're preserving the housing that we already have. So what you're seeing on this slide here in the chart is that in the red bar at the far right, it shows that over just a four-year period in the Twin Cities, more than 32,000 units of private market affordable housing was lost through sales, through rent increases, through stagnating wages. And that averages to about 6,500 units lost every year versus about 5,300 newly produced units. So really, we're barely treading water here, right? Barely, not even staying even while our population grows and our housing needs continue. And this is happening not just in the Twin Cities, but around the state. Minnesota Housing Partnership has done a lot of research on this NOAA housing. We call it our Market Watch series. So you can go to our website and look at these reports. Our latest one is on Greater Minnesota. And what you're seeing here is this map. It helps us understand where our risks are throughout the state. And one of the things that is popping up out of the map, of course, is the St. Cloud metro area, which is a pronounced market for NOAA housing. And that's important because St. Cloud's proximity to the 7-county metro area is increasingly attractive to developers who are seeing value in upscaling these properties. So, of course, that means that there's this enormous risk of losing affordable units, which, for example, St. Cloud employers like Centricare that provides healthcare desperately need. I recall, I think it was the first time I met Representative Tice when I was visiting Centricare a couple years ago. I heard that there was more than 600 unfilled job openings, most of them entry level, many of them things like personal care attendants, healthcare support. Jobs that are in demand, that people need in the community to maintain their health, but these hoped-for workers need housing within reach of these entry-level jobs. And they can't, Centricare can't fill the jobs if the workers don't have a place to live. So we're seeing that in Fargo-Moorhead, in Duluth, in Mankato, all across the state. So the next slide illustrates this point with a little more detail. This is a map of Duluth, and it's where the orange dots are where the NOAA housing properties are, and the green colors indicate each neighborhood's median household income, with the darker green being the higher income and the very light area being the lower income. And you'll see here that light-colored neighborhood in the middle, that reflects the city's lowest median household income community, and it encompasses and is adjacent to downtown, where is also the largest cluster of NOAA housing. And again, this is not fancy, expensive housing that the market might be producing today. This is hardworking housing for hardworking folks. And it's at risk of being too expensive for exactly the workers we need to build back our economy. So the bill, House File 443, that Representative Howard has introduced, is proposing $50 million to preserve NOAA housing. And I would say $50 million is a good start. Right? But it will be used alongside social equity capital and these crazy low interest rates that exist today to save more than 2,500 affordable NOAA apartments. And it's desperately needed because to keep these properties both affordable and kept up, as Representative Howard noted, that there's often rehab needs. It means that there's a gap that rents can't pay because we're trying to keep them affordable, right? And today it's about a $20,000 per unit gap, but that gap will be increasing over time as well. So we need to use every tool that is available to us. We need huge investments in housing infrastructure bonds, hundreds of millions of dollars, so all these needs can be addressed. And what I want to make sure that you have as a key takeaway is that investing in NOAA is a very cost-effective tool to address our housing shortage. So this last year has really shown us in stark terms, right, how essential housing is. And we've fallen behind in producing housing, in preserving housing, and in providing rental assistance to hardworking low-income families to pay for their housing. And it's why this committee and this session broadly, you're seeing so many needed and cost-effective proposals to invest in housing. But frankly, there have been very few tools to date for expressly investing in preserving this NOAA housing. So in the past, I've previously presented to this committee on the fact that wages are not keeping up with housing costs. And too many families who are living on the edge are actually living in NOAA housing. This is homelessness prevention, right? They can't afford to pay the increases that are reflected in this market's relentless upward pressure on rents. So this last year has also shown us how stretched our low-income families are in trying to pay their housing costs. And we cannot talk about this pressure without understanding the inequitable racial outcomes that we're seeing. So people of color are more negatively impacted by this squeeze than white families. 60% of people of color are renters versus 20% of white households. So this is an equity strategy as well. And recent data from the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, from their portfolio of already funded NOAA projects, has shown that 40% of the households in this housing that we're trying to preserve, that this legislation is asking you to invest in, 40% of those residents are among our very lowest households, making 30% of area median income and below. So I thank you to Vice Chair Howard for your leadership and all the committee members who've had, you guys have your hands full, right, in leaning in this historic moment of housing need and opportunity. But the time to act, to invest in this housing is now, because market forces are just going to make these investments more costly over time. So Chair Hausman and committee members, thank you so much, and I'm certainly available for questions.
We'll take the three testifiers, and then we'll see if anyone has questions of the testifiers. Maria Regan-Gonzalez, Mayor of the City of Richfield, is here as well. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Maria Regan-Gonzalez, the Mayor of Richfield. All right, I'll start my testimony. Well, I just want to say thank you to the committee, first and foremost, for giving us this opportunity to share our real life stories about the impact and importance that investing in NOAA has. So I just want to say personally that my biggest concern that does keep me up at night, and I will tell you keeps other mayors up at night, is housing stability for our residents. And this isn't just something, as Ann said, that we're seeing here in the Twin Cities. My day job is at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I work in public health. And I will tell you, whether it's Wilmer, Winona, Worthington, this is an issue that is so crucial across the state for so many different reasons. And not only is it one of our most important issues for health and well-being and stability of our communities, it's a blind spot in a lot of conversations here in Minnesota. And I'm not exactly sure why that is the case, but I will tell you, it's not just one tool for affordable housing. It is absolutely the most important tool we have to address the affordable housing crisis here in Minnesota. And we are at a crucial point in our community where we will either continue to accelerate mass gentrification across our state, or we can stop and invest in things like this NOAA fund and these public policies to help keep families in their homes, in their school districts, and in their communities. So I just want to say, in my opinion, this is the most important tool that we have, and as stated before, cost effective. So, we don't have to guess or think about what would happen if we don't invest in these funds and in this bill and in these bills. I can tell you from personal experience, and Representative Howard shared a little bit about that. We can tell you what the impact is. I can give you real numbers of what actually happened. So we had, 145 students impacted in our school district, which resulted in an immediate layoff of 33 staff of our Richfield School District because of the students that were displaced immediately from the Richfield School District because of the displacement of one apartment complex in our city. The school district lost $1.5 million as a result of losing those students, not to mention the instability that those students face in such a crucial time in their development. And, students lost friends, family members lost friends, and it decimated not only those families, but it decimated the community of Richfield. And as Representative Howard said, we are still facing the impacts of that loss because of Crossroads. We had folks that were displaced and homeless as well. just because of that displacement. There's not affordable housing for people to go to because these are the most affordable units. And now we're left, you know, when we create new affordability, that affordability is really not affordable for our most in need. And it is really, you know, not in reach, which means, as Anne said, we are putting people out on the streets in our communities who are keeping our business districts, our downtowns, and our schools alive and thriving. And I'll tell you, you know, the city of Richfield, but cities across the state are doing what we can. We're passing inclusionary housing policies. We're putting ordinances and incentives to work with landlords to let us know if they're interested in selling and looking at ways to incentivize them to work with us to find preservation and nonprofit buyers like Aon and other groups. We gave, you know, $150,000 through our housing redevelopment fund for assistance for Aon to purchase Seasons Park. We made sure they qualified for the federal level 4D tax credit as well. We've given money through our economic development authorities to support Aon in updating, you know, Seasons Park so that that property that they acquired, which has so many needs for rehabilitation, but can't be addressed because, again, we don't have those resources at the state level and at other levels to not only purchase our NOAA housing, but to make sure that we improve the condition of this housing and maintain it as affordable for the communities that are already living there. So cities are doing everything we can with the tools that we have, but our tools are extremely limited. And, you know, I just want to lift up the importance of why we really need support from the state level that is flexible, as mentioned before, but for the acquisition of these properties and the preservation. And I would even go further and say we need to map our NOAA housing out statewide, and we need to identify and have proactive game plans for how we're going to maintain that housing in our state. So I'm here to say, first and foremost, I can tell you personally the impact that this has had on our businesses, on our school district, on our families, on our city, and on our residents, and that it is the most important tool that we have in Minnesota to address the affordable housing crisis. And I'm really excited to be working with all of you to figure out what that looks like. But it definitely starts with mass investment in preserving and improving our NOAA housing through these opportunities that we have in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And now we have one final testifier, Chloe Jackson, a tenant organizer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Chloe Jackson. I am a renter in Minneapolis. I'm a single parent mother. I'm a single parent who makes $45,000 a year annually. And I use more than half of my money for rent. Sometimes I fluctuate between my utilities to see which utilities will like have to take a hit so I can pay the rent. NOAA is very necessary. We need to make sure that we keep funding NOAA for the fact that we want to stop the displacement of families. I may be in jeopardy at any moment to be displaced if I don't pay my rent on time. So we need this. And I know it's not much NOAA housings throughout the state, but we need more. Because if we constantly allow the realtors, those big developers to come in and say, hey, we want to make affordable housing, and they really don't make affordable housing, we're going to have a lot of people homeless in our state. And that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Wirth, do we have any questions of the testifiers? Members, questions for the testifiers?
Yes, Madam Chair, we have a number of questions. First on the list is Representative Olson.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. I think that was really good. I don't have a question so much as a comment. In seeing the slide that the first presenter shared, I mean, it was my community, and when you see it in black and white like that, or green and shades of green, it's pretty striking that the lowest income part of my community and my district is also the place with the most naturally occurring affordable housing. And I feel like, you know, this is a place where we can be on the front end of something by doing a serious investment here rather than dealing with an issue when it becomes unbearable and overwhelming to deal with, we can be at the front end of making sure that that stays affordable. And so I'm just grateful for both the bill authors for working on this issue, because I think this is one time we could be proactive. I mean, we're a little behind the eight ball. I'm not saying we're not, but I think this is one instance where we can be engaged now before on this issue in particular. I do have to say too, in representing Duluth and the tension you feel as you watch a community that wants to grow and you watch neighbors change, I also hear from my constituents that they watch that and they're fearful they're not going to be able to afford their homes. We have old homes in Duluth, you know, that are rental units. We have people that are working in, you know, hospitality and tourism. They don't see their incomes going up anytime soon. That is if they're even employed right now. And they see what's happening and the changes in our community. And, you know, I hear that. I hear that in daycare drop-offs, you know, with parents. I hear that in people who reach out. There is this undercurrent of things we have to balance at the legislature around growth and the economy and coming back from the pandemic. But with that comes, I think, a healthy realization that, like, people need to be able to afford their homes and stay where they are. And I think this is a great bill, that this is the time to invest in it. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we can all be strong advocates in greater Minnesota and in urban cores. Like, this is something we can do now. And so I just want to say thank you to the bill authors and testifiers for laying out the case so well around why this is the time.
And members, right now it was just comments to the testifiers, but Representative Howard, should we have you move your, no, I think we'll just see if there are there more questions just for the testifiers, Mr. Wirth.
Yes, Madam Chair. Next on the list is Representative Hassan.
Representative Hassan.
My question is not to the testifiers, should I?
Okay, we're going to give both authors an opportunity to answer questions too, so. We'll keep you on the list.
Madam Chair, anyone else? Is Representative Gomez.
Representative Gomez.
I should probably wait also.
Okay, we'll keep you on the list. Anyone else?
Representative Tice.
Representative Tice.
Keep me on the list, please, Madam Chair.
Okay, all right. Okay, so thank you to all of the testifiers. And so now we are ready to make some motions. Representative Howard, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 443.
Representative Howard moves that House File 443 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Are there questions of Representative Howard? I actually have one. Is your intention to move one or the other? In other words, you're asking for general fund money, but should that not be available, that you would make them eligible for housing infrastructure bonds, or are there dual tracks, or how?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've discussed this with some of the testifiers and Representative Egbaje. And, you know, we think $50 million is the appropriate, as testifiers have said, the need is more. We think that investment level is warranted, and whether that be occurring, you know, $25 million through general fund appropriation and $25 million through housing infrastructure bonds, I think that's been a part of the discussion. And so partly I think it's having this initial hearing and then having each of these bills move through the process.
And maybe I'll have the other motion made. This one we don't have to vote on because we're just laying it over for possible inclusion. So Representative Egbaje, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that House File 1118 be recommended and passed and referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
And so that one we will vote on later, but now to more questions. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the bill authors. This is a really important both bills are very important, and this is an issue that is in greater Minnesota, like the testifiers said, in the urban core of our cities. I remember when the Crossroads incident issue in Richfield was happening. I was working at Hennepin County at the time, so social worker in Hennepin County, and I had clients who were living in those apartments who are displaced. And I can't tell you how difficult that was. Like, just being a social worker that's working with those, clients, finding them, first of all, just locating them was a problem. And then we had to find place for them to stay, shelters. They had to, their children's schools were relocated. Just a life uprooted, that it was just a complicated, issue. Had we just kept those families housed and stayed in those spaces, their lives would not have been, hectic as it was. I just want to, say that I think that we can get in front of this problem, even though we're a little too late, but we can continue to be champions to make sure that housing is fundamental for job security. Housing is fundamental for education stability. We know that, kids who are, in stabilized housing do well in school. Someone who has stable home can keep a job. I mean, you look at every aspect of life, and housing is fundamental for all aspects of life, and for somebody to stay stabilized and have a productive, successful, meaning life. So I encourage everybody to think about this as, one of the issues that we need to tackle to just help our families and our communities and our constituencies and stabilize our state's economy as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much to Representatives Howard and Agbaje for bringing these efforts forward. I worked at the city of Minneapolis for a number of years before I came to the legislature, and this was definitely I think when you're in a city, you really are on the front lines of hearing directly from your impacted residents. I think actually Ms. Jackson was one of our constituents, and when I worked in the council office, and this has been I think we heard a lot of really great context around sort of the trend of this issue and how important it is for us to intervene soon. I wanted to just make a comment and then ask a question of somebody else who's on the call quickly, if I could. I think that we have a lot of conversations in this committee, unfortunately, where we sort of pit the interests of tenants and landlords against one another. And there's, there's some situations where that's the case, but to me, I guess, when I represent a very economically diverse district, half of it, there's sort of a lot of wealth, and half of it, there's not. And, I don't have a lot of subsidized affordable housing in the half of my district where there's a much lower kind of median income. It's all naturally occurring affordable housing. And a lot of naturally occurring affordable housing is owned by small scale kind of mom and pop landlords, the folks that we talk a lot about in this committee. And so I hope that we can see this as a place where, these investments and we have to hold on to the reality that there are actually a lot of people who own this kind of housing, right? This sort of older housing that are holding rents lower than they know they could get, right? Because they understand how important it is for people to have homes that are affordable. I have some friends who own naturally occurring affordable housing, and I always talk to them about housing policy, and it's a really helpful kind of check for me, and these landlords are really doing kind of a public service in a lot of ways, in keeping rents lower than what the market could bear. And so this is a way to help support them in those efforts and to understand that, some of these small scale landlords are really holding back the tide of, of rising rents and displacement, and which, we talk a lot about what the impacts of those are. I think Representative Hassan just kind of really encapsulated it well from her perspective as a social worker. So that's my comment. And kind of on that front, I think about the pressure that's on some of maybe these small scale landlords who have deferred maintenance that they know they need to have, or they know they need to do. but, you know, doing the maintenance or doing the improvement that they know the building needs would necessitate a rent raise, and they're kind of sitting in this tension. And there's a way that that makes them vulnerable is the wrong word, but like that are really that when a nice offer comes along, even if it's from someone who maybe doesn't share the values that they share about maintaining the fabric of the community that they've invested in, that it becomes much more appealing. And so I saw that Mr. Arthur from Aon is on the call, and I wonder if he can tell us a little bit about kind of like what the sort of Ms. Mavity referred to this a little bit, but excuse me, he can kind of bring in some perspective from other places around the country that are sort of a little bit further along this path that we're on in terms of our naturally occurring affordable housing being bought by investors or, you know, whoever, and people being displaced. I wonder if he can talk a little bit more about the data of where other cities are and what our future might look like if we do not intervene at this time to help those landlords and tenants out.
I think he indicated a willingness to answer questions if he's still on.
I am.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Arthur. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Alan Arthur. I'm the president and CEO of Aon, and we develop, own, and manage 5,560 affordable apartments in the Twin Cities, and we have saved 3,000 units of NOAA housing in the last 3.5 years. It's a very good point you're making. So first of all, Madam Chair and Representative Gomez, it's a very important point you're making that these small landlords of housing that was created in the 70s, 60s, 80s, early 80s are facing a really, really tough situation where they need to recapitalize. Like all housing deteriorates over the course of time. They need to recapitalize that housing somehow. If it's recapitalized in the marketplace, then the rents have to go up. That basically economically evicts the people who live there. So in some of our companion cities across the country, like Portland, Seattle, and others, they have lost all of their NOAA housing. And that's why you see in the last 10 years in the city of Portland and the city of Seattle, for example, homelessness has skyrocketed. Why, if you go to the city of Seattle now and you walk down the street in every single opening at 6 o'clock in the morning, every single entry to every commercial business has somebody sleeping on cardboard. That mimics what has happened in Los Angeles and San Francisco 20 years ago and 25 years ago. And so we're next unless we do something about it. And this is just a step towards doing something about it. Ideally, we would figure out programs to help all of our current landlords who keep their rents below a certain level. Unfortunately, assessors, for example, assess housing based on average market rates of housing units and not what they're actually charging in rents today. And so there is an inequity in our system that there's several, many, many, many inequities in our systems that we all know about that are to the detriment of the people who are working our minimum wages and around minimum wage incomes. So I hope that answered your question, Representative Gomez.
Thank you. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate hearing these bills today. And this is exactly where I think we need to put a lot of our efforts, in that this is how we keep affordable housing. I got a giggle at naturally occurring because as somebody who at one time owned 13 homes that we purchased during the recession, we had a construction company. In order to keep our guys busy, we had to figure out something. And we were buying homes, and I'll tell you, they were cheap, 40 grand. We had one that we picked up for 20 grand. It was horrible. In fact, we gutted it. We gutted the whole thing. It was gutted. So when you say naturally occurring, it's like, no, I helped clean it out. I helped do all that stuff. I painted. I did this. I did that. It was, we all did. We all worked together in getting these homes back up. So when you say naturally occurring, it's like, no, we worked our buns off to get those houses where they could be. And at one time we owned 13, we're down to 5. I've talked about that before. But, you know, when you talk about, I thought Representative Gomez did a great job. You know, this past summer, we had to replace a driveway. That's $5,000. We had to replace it because it was bad, but also because we had a water issue. Rainwater was going into the basement instead of draining. So, and when we have another driveway to do in the next year or so. And it's something that we constantly have to do. But I would say we probably got a little bit ahead of some of the games, because when we bought the homes, we almost always put in new windows, re-insulated, put in doors, did what we could to make sure, probably flooring, but just to make sure that it was going to be a good place for folks to be. And I'll tell you, we've had, out of the five homes we have, two of them have been there since we started renting to them. I mean, they were the only persons in those homes. And we're very proud of that. We work really hard to make sure that they can stay there. What's really interesting is my Zoom meeting before this was with the Central Minnesota Builders Association, and we had a city planner on as well. And Matt talked about how the city now is looking at how do we do market rate housing? How do we keep this, keep these homes for folks? And it truly is a big problem. As was highlighted in one of the pictures, you know, my area is a big hot spot. Because we have so much going on and we're close enough to the cities that we're, you know, I don't want to say bedroom communities, but we have a lot of people going down the freeway. That's why I always get my voice heard when it comes to expanding I-94. But what was really interesting to me is, you know, he said right now they have at least two multifamily units being built a year, which is good to hear that it's still being done. And rates right now, interest rates are great. And I think Representative Farr could tell you, yeah, they are. They're unbelievable. But construction materials right now are very expensive. So that's why I really appreciate, and I hope that, you know, we will look at some of these, you know, opportunities for folks to be able to fix the homes up, get them to where they should be. And Representative Gomez is really, really sincere when she says, we're trying very hard to keep our rents where it is. We very seldom try to raise our rent, and we only do that when we absolutely feel we have to. Right now, water costs are great too, and we're going to have a conversation with one of our tenants about water costs and what can we do to make sure that we're keeping it down, because right now we pay the water costs. The city of St. Cloud does not allow to put water in a tenant's name. So I always know they're going to have water. What is nice about St. Cloud too is this, you know, this group is really looking into how do we get market value housing. And I know Representative, now Mayor Fabian, up in Roseau, and Representative Keel have always talked about their needs for housing. And we've looked a lot into manufactured homes. And again, I'm going to say, does any of the funding that would be available for manufactured homes? And I know Representative Howard, you do a lot with manufactured homes as well. So when we talk about, you know, affordable housing, are we also looking at not just naturally occurring, but also manufactured housing?
Representative Howard, I think we're going to have another bill on manufactured housing. I don't know if you, I think to your bill, it would just be, it would not be eligible under your bill, I believe.
Madam Chair, that is correct, although I do think there's an analogous point to be made, and it just speaks to the immense needs, you know, the fact that we really need to be looking at ways to grow the pie in our investments in housing. Otherwise, we're just not going to meet the needs. But, you know, as we've talked about manufactured home parks, when those get purchased and redeveloped, we lose that affordable source of home ownership forever. It's gone. And that's exactly what's happening, I think, even really on a larger scale when it comes to the naturally occurring affordable housing we talked about. It happened in Crossroads at Penns and could be on the verge of happening all across the state, and has happened in other regions. So it's an analogous situation. To me, it's part of the reason we need to, it's both, you know, the moral charge and then the efficient economic argument to be addressing this issue now on the front end.
I know we have a bill or two coming up, so I know we'll be revisiting that issue. Mr. Wirth, do we have more questions?
Madam Chair, last on the list is Representative Heinrich.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question for Rep. Howard. I was wondering if you could kind of walk us through, give us a little bit more nuts and bolts, maybe using Crossroads as an example. That $50 million in, let's say it was housing infrastructure bonds, you know, this bill is expands HIB to include the acquisition and rehabilitation. So if they're, I'm assuming that this was probably the lowest rent in town as it was classified as the most affordable. And apparently there was a private investor that came in and bought the property. How would have the $50 million allotted in your bill and HIB could have changed that situation? Or can you kind of talk about maybe an acquisition process? Or I'm imagining that some of that money comes in to help rehabilitate the property, but the rent stays the same and people are not displaced possibly. But if you could just talk to that. Thank you, Representative Howard. Thank you,
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Heinrich. It's a really good question.
Relatively briefly, though, because we do have two other bills.
I might actually have Mr. Arthur in part answer the question.
Okay.
And I think that the second story I talked about in Seasons Park is maybe even a more helpful, story here in that, you know, our nonprofit developers, they do, you know, they're competing in the marketplace with private developers for some of these facilities when they come up. This fund would help stretch those dollars further and potentially allow them, you know, not just to purchase the facility, but to have the resources they need to make some of the improvements while keeping rents affordable. But I might just ask Mr. Arthur just to quickly comment on kind of the financing of these deals and how a fund like this could help basically support or supercharge their efforts, so to speak.
Mr. Arthur. Mr. Arthur, do we have you? Either he's muted or we don't have them anymore.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Arthur could have probably done a little more compelling job than me, but what I'll say is, Representative Heinrich, basically these resources will help stretch dollars further of our nonprofits and make them more willing and more able really to sort of take on. So at Crossroads, for example, there's definitely rehab needed. If a fund like this is available, it makes it more likely that a nonprofit is able to, you know, compete and purchase a facility like this and have the resources they need to do the rehab while keeping rents affordable.
Thank you. I think we have completed the questions. It occurs to me Representative Arthur might be willing to call Representative Heinrich and just talk through that issue a little more. So members, the Representative Howard's bill is held over. We do have to move the other one because it's going to capital investment. Representative Aguaje, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to renew my motion. Sorry, I lost the mute.
That'd be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
McBadger?
Aye.
Bliss?
Aye.
Gomez?
Aye.
Hassan?
Aye.
Heinrich?
Aye.
Herr?
Aye.
Juergens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
And Ryer?
Aye.
Madam Chair, that is 13 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is referred to the next committee. And now we have a thank you, members and testifiers. I'm hoping Representative Richardson is on the call. Chair will move that House File 450 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 450 provides a right to counsel for public housing tenants unable to afford counsel in breach of leases cases. This bill is designed to level the playing field between public housing tenants and public housing authorities, which are represented by publicly funded attorneys. The bill is also narrowly tailored and limited to breach of lease cases and excludes cases related to non-payment of rent. As we all know, and you just discussed, safe, affordable, and accessible housing is essential for family stability, social and economic well-being, and mental and physical health. And the impacts of displacing families from their homes has long-lasting negative effects on both mental health, physical health, family unity, and economic well-being. Mothers who experience eviction report significantly higher rates of depression, parenting stress, and material hardship. Children and families that experience evictions are more likely to be placed in out-of-home care, which is associated with adverse childhood experiences and poor short and long-term physical and mental health outcomes for children. And these are impacts that are costly to address. Homeless shelters, emergency room costs, school funding issues due to chronic absences of students' homelessness, foster care costs, all of these things add up. Extensive research shows that tenants with legal representation are much more likely to avoid an eviction judgment and keep possession of their homes than unrepresented tenants. In Hennepin County, data collected between 2016 and 2018 showed how the extent of representation, full, limited, or none, influenced tenant outcomes in cases. In all dimensions of the study, tenants with full or limited representation fared much better than unrepresented tenants. A few highlights from the study. Tenants with full representation won 21% of their cases. Those with limited representation won 24% of their cases. Unrepresented tenants only won 11% of cases. 52% of fully represented tenants remained in their home, compared with 48% of tenants with limited representation, and 31% of unrepresented tenants remained in their home. 78% of fully represented tenants left courts without an eviction filing on their record, while this was only true for 17% of tenants with limited representation and just 6% of unrepresented tenants. And most notably, the study showed that represented tenants are four times less likely to enter homeless shelters. Appointed counsel in public housing cases can be effective means to stabilize families and communities and reduce burdens on publicly funded programs, including county shelters and emergency assistance. Today, I have with me attorney Larry McDonough, who will testify on behalf of the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. McDonough.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Richardson. I'm a senior counsel with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Over almost the last 40 years, I've represented around 10,000 tenants and landlords in eviction cases. I'd like to thank Representative Richardson for carrying this bill. I want to make it clear that this is a limited right to a court-appointed attorney in public housing eviction cases, and only those claiming breach of lease, not those claiming non-payment of rent. We patterned this bill off of many of the court-appointed attorney statutes we have in Minnesota, such as commitment, guardianship, quarantine, parentage, and juvenile proceedings. This bill comes out of extensive discussions within the Minnesota State Bar Association about the right to counsel and where to focus that on the most critical cases, and that being housing as one. Many jurisdictions around the country have been doing this. We've focused more narrowly on public housing tenants facing evictions for breach of lease, for a couple of reasons. One, to be honest, size. If we were looking at court-appointed attorneys and all eviction cases in Minnesota, we'd be looking at 16,000 a year, and that'd be huge. And so one was just out of a cost issue to look at what's the most vulnerable population, to keep those numbers down, but also to really target it. Public housing tenants are very low income. Many are elderly, people with disabilities. If they lose, their evictions are significant for a couple of reasons. One, if they are evicted, they not only face the challenges that other evicted tenants do, but they also lose that important benefit of having housing that's approximately 30% of income. And for someone with a very low income, like, you know, $500 a month, their rent would be in the neighborhood of $150 a month. So that's a really big loss kind of economically. But also these eviction cases are complicated. I mean, I've been an attorney for a long time, and I'd say of the eviction cases I do, these are the most complicated. They involve state law, they involve federal law, they involve administrative law. Sometimes they involve constitutional law because we're dealing with a government benefit. So I think with that, maybe I will, last thing I wanted to say, just in terms of numbers, we did research of all the publicly available public housing eviction files from 2016, and we only found 60 statewide, and 50 of those were in the Twin Cities area and in larger cities around Minnesota. In greater Minnesota, most public housing authorities had no eviction cases for breach of lease, public housing, and some only had one. And so, so I think I'll leave it at that and see if there are some questions that I might be able to help answer.
Representative Richardson, I have one. The fiscal note for this bill shows some impact on counties, and my understanding is that you're continuing to work on that and think that through. This is actually goes on to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee, and so it's going to really be more of an issue for that committee to talk about the fiscal note. But my understanding is you're still doing some work on that piece.
Madam Chair, that is correct. We haven't identified a funding source within the bill, and we're looking forward to working on stakeholders related to the funding issue.
With her. Okay, thank you. Mr. Wirtz, do we have questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Olson has a question.
Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this forward. It's a great bill, and I love the support you're giving to folks who need it in this. So this is awesome. Question for you, in terms of the scope of doing it just with public housing, and why not kind of, you know, these protections sound great and things we need for low-income Minnesotans outside of public housing too. So just curious, you know, if you could speak to that and kind of why you may be honed in on this. That would be great. Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, one of the reasons that we're focusing in on this population is because it tends to be an extremely vulnerable population financially, and also in terms of when you look at the makeup of who are tenants within public housing programs, you tend to find a lot of seniors, people with disabilities, and also people who are extremely low income as well. And we know that there are huge intersections with those with mental health issues, and also those in recovery from substance use disorders. And so we really see this as a way to focus in on some of the most vulnerable individuals within our communities. And as Mr. McDonough stated as well, when we have evictions that occur as part of public housing cases, the impact of that can be far-reaching because it can prevent them from being able to access other public housing programs within the future as well.
Follow-up, Representative Olson?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Other questions, Mr. Wirth?
Madam Chair, Representative Hassan has a question.
Representative Hassan?
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Gibson, for this bill. This is really important. I have a similar question to the one Rep. Olson asked. People who are also in housing subsidy happen to be low income as well. Is this only for low income, or would it expand to Section 8 or Section 42 people who are in housing subsidy?
Representative Richardson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the scope of the bill would be focused on public housing tenants. And the public housing authority is represented by publicly funded attorneys. And so the idea would be within the scope of public housing tenants that we would be attempting to level the playing field with that demographic specifically.
Follow-up, Representative Hassan?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. I think, and maybe we can look into this for future, see what happens with this bill. I think I hear a lot of issues with Section 8, people who have Section 8 and Section 42 struggling with evictions. So that would be another area that maybe we can expand to this bill for future references. Thank you, though. This is a really important bill.
Thank you. Mr. Wirth, other questions?
Madam Chair, there are no other questions in the queue.
Okay. In that case, any concluding comments, Representative Richardson?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to present the bill today, and we are looking forward to continuing to work with stakeholders as well as the bill progresses, and I also want to take this opportunity to thank Mr. McDonough for appearing to testify today as well and to ask for support.
Thank you very much. I will renew my motion that House File 450 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
McBadgett?
Aye.
Bliss?
Aye.
Gomez?
Aye.
Hassan?
Aye.
Heinrich?
Aye.
Herr?
Aye.
Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
And Ryer?
Aye.
Madam Chair, that is 13 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the next committee. Thank you. And now we have House File 567. I will move that House File 567 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Fisher, welcome to the committee. You're getting a workout. I understand you had another committee you had to appear with.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that and appreciate you having House File 567 before you. I do have an author's amendment.
There is an author's amendment. And Representative Tice, I'll just ask for a voice vote for the author's amendment unless you or any of your members are asking for a roll call. Would you, Representative Fisher, just describe what the author's amendment does?
Yes, what the author's amendment does is make sure that the language I have in my bill aligns with the language in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So it's basically to get it in conformity with that.
Okay. If everyone unmutes, we will do a voice vote on that. All in favor of the author's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? That amendment is now on the bill, and the bill is before you as the author prefers. So to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee, for the opportunity to present House File 567. This bill would appropriate approximately $500,000 to Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for grants to nonprofits to investigate and report on housing discrimination. The grant funds may be used to recruit and train testers. Grant recipients may share test results with state or federal agencies that handle housing discrimination and to use the information if needed for advocating for the rights of prospective renters or purchasers. It would also require a final report by February 15th, and the report would help identify who the organizations were receiving grants, how the funds were spent, the number of investigations that were done, tests conducted, types of housing tested, and location of tests, and what the what kind of outcomes that were from any activities that were undertaken. The reason I'm bringing this bill forward is that, well, first of all, I want to say there are many landlords out there that are doing the right thing, who are treating everybody fairly and equitably across the board. But my experiences of working with people who are homeless or at risk of being homeless have shown that there are some bad actors out there. And it's very frustrating when bad actors are doing things and doing discriminatory practices that that make advantages for people of certain races over other people of certain races or other classes that are protected. This fair housing would help encompass and address that area. It would take a look at not just the characteristic and taking a look at housing itself, but also the fees that are charged in the process, because some of the things that have been seen out there are not just in access to the housing, but also the levels of the fees that are being charged different people who are coming in, whether it's deposits, first month's, last month's rents, et cetera. So these are important things. This bill would help provide the necessary resources to further this critical work to make sure that we can make sure that if we have bad actor for the bad actors out there, that they're being weeded out and that the people have access to housing in an equitable way. I do have a testifier with me today, and I would like to turn it over to our testifier.
Colleen Walbrun from Housing Discrimination Law Project from Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Fisher. My name is Colleen Walbrun. I'm a supervising attorney at the Housing Discrimination Law Project.
Proceed with testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Public policy supports the prevention and eradication of discrimination in housing. Under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, Minnesota Human Rights Act advances the cause of freedom from discrimination in housing because of, among other characteristics, race, color, religion, or national origin. And as the Act so powerfully declares, such discrimination threatens the rights and privileges of the inhabitants of this state and menaces the institutions and foundations of democracy. What is fair housing testing? Fair housing testing is an important means of making those important words in our statutes meaningful in real life. Fair housing testing is a longstanding federal HUD program. Testing is also conducted by the U.S. Department of Justice and a variety of other organizations nationally. And in a fair housing test, teams of persons as similar as possible in all characteristics except the one being tested visit the same property or home at closely spaced intervals to apply for housing. When differential treatment is given to a person who, for example, is a person of color, this evidence raises a concern about potential illegal discrimination. There is no place in our society for housing discrimination. A person who is qualified should not be turned away from housing of their choice because of the color of their skin or because they may have been born in another country. Sometimes bias is subtle, but it is no less discriminatory. The result is the same, a slammed door and a fair opportunity denied. Fair housing testing advances the public policy goals of our state by uncovering evidence of illegal rental housing practices. Fair housing testing provides an opportunity for advocates to take action to ensure that people who have been injured by housing discrimination are granted access to the housing for which they qualify. Racial and other forms of discrimination have far-reaching consequences, not just for the individual discriminated against, but for our entire society. Enforcing fair access to housing not only has a positive outcome for the person who has been denied housing, but it can impact the stability and well-being of entire families, even generations. And by learning about the results of fair housing testing, rental housing providers can take affirmative measures to ensure that all home seekers are given fair and equal treatment. Thank you for providing me with the opportunity to testify in support of House File 567. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, there's also an attachment, I think that came in fairly late from Minnesota Housing Partnership, you heard from Ann Mavity earlier, and they are in strong support of this bill and have some additional written testimony that they have. Representative Fisher, do you have further comments to the bill, or do we go to questions?
I have one further comment. Is I had the Minnesota Realtors reached out to me yesterday. This was last night before I got to their email, and they had a small request for a change. They have not taken a formal position on it, but they did make a suggestion for a. As we continue to work on the bill, because it won't be going to the floor, and it'll be part of your bill, is that on line 118 of the bill, they have asked that a couple of words be inserted. And what it would be is after the word conducted, they ask testing methodology be inserted there so that the new line would read investigations or tests conducted, conducted, insert testing methodology, the types of housing tested. So it would have testing methodology inserted at that point there. I'm not asking to have it amended right now, but I'm saying that as we continue working on it, and I want to thank the Minnesota Realtors for reaching out to me to make the suggestion there to help make this bill a better bill.
And it sounds like you're open to that suggestion.
Yes, very much so.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other comments to the bill before we go to questions? Mr. Wirth, do we have questions?
Madam Chair, there are no questions in the queue.
We don't have questions. And this, we don't vote on this because this is, we're just House File 567, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee budget bill later. And that language that Representative Fisher just commented on is will be acted on at that time or incorporated. So I think no vote necessary there. Any other questions or business? The next meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee will be on Thursday, February 18 at 10:30 a.m. There being no other business before us, we are adjourned.